From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Albany with news that might seem kind of inside baseball, not all that sexy, but it could have huge implications for Rochester and the Finger Lakes and essentially all of New York State outside of New York City. The news was that State Senator Jeremy Cooney was named chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, and this meant that the leader of the Transportation Committee will continue to be an upstater, not solely focused on New York City and the MTA. Not there's anything wrong with New York City and the MTA, but if you listen to Senator Cooney, this has major implications in two ways. The first is that Cooney sees transportation as a mechanism to deal with poverty. The second is that Cooney could be the most aggressive state leader ever in pursuing high-speed rail. The idea of high-speed rail has been a dream for decades in this state for some people, with the late Congresswoman Louise Slaughter being one of its champions. And yet New York has watched other states start and then stop and then try to restart and then stop their high-speed rail projects. And one of the big barriers is not just cost, but the trend of cost estimates being too low by big margins. And here's a recent example. The projected cost of a high-speed rail system linking San Francisco to Los Angeles was initially $33 billion. The new estimate is $128 billion. And yet here's how Newsweek reports the public appetite for high-speed rail in California. Quote, a plurality of eligible voters support the construction of a high-speed rail line linking San Francisco to Los Angeles, even when told the estimated cost had soared to $128 billion, up from an initial estimate of $33 billion, according to a survey conducted exclusively for Newsweek. The Redfield and Wilton Strategies poll found 40% of voters there think the project is still worth it after being told the cost increase, against 33% who disagree, 27% who are unsure, end quote. Senator Cooney recently noted in an interview with City and State that there is no firm plan in place right now for a New York high-speed rail system, but he is determined to push the idea into the phase where we can at least see what it would look like if it became real. Where would high-speed rail start and stop? How could it be paid for? Obviously, New York State would pay for quite a bit, and yet the former state Senate transportation chair is now a member of Congress. Cooney has joked that he has his number. My guest this hour is here to talk about not just high-speed rail, but the future of transportation across our state. State Senator Jeremy Cooney, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
So glad to be back here, Evan, talking about my favorite topic.
Yeah, I think this actually might be.
This is.
And welcome as well to Steve Strauss, who is with us, the Executive Director of the Empire State Passenger Association. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Great to have you. Thank you for being with us. Senator Cooney, let me just start with you here. You know, as I said, who's on what committees isn't usually all that sexy to listeners. But it matters here because nothing against the MTA in New York City, but you've got a perspective that I think you can bring to your colleagues, and you've said that you want them to understand the value of transportation across the state. Tell me about what you want to do as the chair of this committee.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and I'm really just so pleased and honored to serve in this new capacity in the state Senate as the chair of transportation. I think the way to look at transportation is not just how to get from point A to point B, but it really is what can transportation accomplish? What can good public policy do to help create more equity in our state, can help reduce environmental impact, can help make sure that opportunities that are available in one region, New York City, are not done at the negative for those of us who live outside of the greater New York City region. And so for me, I look at transportation as the great equalizer for New York State. And we have unique needs in different pockets of our state. But I think high-speed rail is one of those unifying aspects that can talk about how we can find economic benefits here in the Greater Rochester area and upstate cities across the Thruway Corridor, but also down to New York City, that they can see some benefits as well if they were better connected to, let's say, Toronto,
sure,
an economic hub and west of us, and then obviously up and down the Northeast Corridor. So I think these conversations are ripe to be had, and I'm looking forward to it.
There was a comment that you made in the City and State piece that I thought was really interesting, and it's about the difference between New York City and much of the rest of the state when it comes to if people don't own a car and they're dealing with transportation issues. I think what you said was in New York City, you know, if you miss, you know, if you're down in the subway, you know, you miss one, you're annoyed, you wait 10, 12 minutes, you get on the next one. If you miss a bus in Rochester, could be 45 minutes, mm-hmm. it could be more, could impact whether you get to work at all. And it's a very different thing.
This is quality of life. This is about recognizing that there are stark differences between the transit experience of a rider in a metro area than in Rochester. This is no way to point our finger or blame RTS. They're doing a wonderful job, but the resources don't match the demand. And I am absolutely confident that if we had more resources directed at our upstate cities to increase the number of buses on the road at one time, the frequency of the routes, meaning that if you do miss the bus, you don't have to wait 30 to 40 minutes, you're waiting 10 to 15 minutes. If that was the case, then I have no doubt that ridership would increase in RTS, but also in Buffalo and Albany and Syracuse. So how do we create that scenario? And part of it is, yes, a little bit in the weeds and making sure that the dollars flow that way in the budget. But also it's about intentionality. So I look at what are the drivers of transportation, pun intended. A lot of it's employers, right? So if we have employees going to the University of Rochester, if we have employees going to the new Amazon distribution center in Gates, if we have employees going more rural areas to access Micron if they live in the Syracuse region, right? How do we utilize those economic development opportunities to drive quality of life through transit?
The fans of your comments on high-speed rail, for example, will probably cheer when they hear you talking about, hey, we can't be 25, 30 years in the future. Mm-mm. If we're going to be aggressive, we have to think about what can be accomplished in what, maybe 5 to 10 years. And that feels like, hey, that's within reach here. That's within sight. The detractors will say, look at California. Look at everywhere they've tried to get this thing going. And then all of a sudden, the costs double and then they triple. Things shut down. Even California hasn't gotten this done yet. And how can you even go down that road knowing that the likelihood is that initial price tag will far undercount it? So how do you split the difference there?
Well, I would say that Americans and New Yorkers need to look beyond our own borders. If you've had the privilege of traveling overseas, whether to parts of Southeast Asia or in places in Europe, you know that you've visited these countries where rail infrastructure is part of everyone's daily life. And the ability to hop on rail and get from maybe you're going to on a vacation or maybe you're visiting on business another country is just so much easier. It's so much more efficient of moving people across great distances. What I thought was interesting in kind of preparing for our conversation today, I was trying to think of what are parts of the world that are not maybe as developed as the United States, but have invested these resources in high-speed rail. And I was surprised to learn that less developed nations such as Serbia or parts of Indonesia, they've done work to create connection points between large cities. So it may not be a comprehensive rail system like Europe has, right? But it has the efficiency of bringing people from Jakarta to Bandung, right? And so making sure that people can get where they need to be in an efficient and environmentally friendly, but obviously, but also in a faster way. And that's what people are looking for, because time is the most precious commodity that we all have. And I believe high-speed rail can really make a difference domestically, but selfishly, as an upstate New Yorker myself, making sure that we are finding opportunities to improve our quality of life in upstate cities and better connect to our downstate neighbors.
You've now worked in government at all different levels. Why do you think rail is so hard to price out, high-speed rail? And are you concerned that whatever our initial price tag is here is going to vastly undercount it?
I'm not as concerned about the cost, because I think that there are values and priorities that are aligning with dollars at the federal level that didn't exist even a couple of years ago. We know that the Biden administration has been one of the most rail-friendly administrations that we have seen in recent years. And one good example of that is they put over $8 billion together for a rail infrastructure program. And I believe about $3 billion of that $8 billion was allocated to what we're calling Brightline West. And that is a high-speed rail connection point between the city of Las Vegas and just outside of L.A. in Southern California. And, you know, those are federal dollars that were recently allocated. In fact, I think I saw some press conference was Pete Buttigieg, you know, cutting a ribbon or something like that. But the idea is that it would get people thinking about how do we connect two major transportation hubs. And for, you know, this is not just about, you know, oh, what does Las Vegas need? What does L.A. need? It's about moving people in a more efficient way and getting more personal automobiles off of the road to move a greater amount of people from point A to point B. And so for me, I think that program specifically is interesting because it cuts down the time it takes to get to Los Angeles if you're coming from Nevada. So just over 2 hours. Will be the total time distance. And it's a lot longer than now because the speed of the train will be going 200 miles per hour. Now, that's not necessarily what we're talking about for New York State. It would be wonderful if we were talking about that. but that's an example of something that's happening right now. And I believe service is planned to begin in just about 5 years or a little under. So that's not too far away from here. So we can dream big, but this is not beyond the realm of possibility.
You're certainly correct to point out that the Biden administration has been very rail friendly. It is possible that starting in January, there will be a new administration. It is possible that Republicans will continue to win and carve back new majorities. And what is inevitably going to be a years and years long process to build high speed rail might not have a Biden supporter. In fact, Newsweek reports on Republicans now trying to pressure the federal government to stop spending on rail. Here's what Newsweek wrote just last week. Quote, two prominent Republicans raised concerns in a joint letter to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Senator Ted Cruz, a ranking member of the Senate committee, and House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chair Sam Graves wrote in May, they said, quote, voters were promised that the California high-speed rail project would cost the state $33 billion and be completed by 2020. 15 years later, the California high-speed rail project has become one of the most troubled mega projects in the nation. The California High-Speed Rail Authority still has not completed a single segment of the system. There's no expected completion date, end quote. That's from their letter, and that's from Newsweek reporting, saying that, you know, Republicans are already making this an issue, even if they don't win the next elections. So can you feel confident that going forward, the federal support would be there for New York State?
Well, I'm confident the Biden administration is going to have 4 more years, so yes. But I will also say this. I do think transportation—
–
I'm very confident.
Okay.
But I will say this on a less political note and a more serious note. I do believe that transportation— – I said it's a great equalizer. It's also a very much a bipartisan issue. So I'll give you a prominent Republican who does believe in high-speed rail. That's Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, former presidential candidate. He has seen this happen in his own state. So the same company, Brightline, which is developing that Las Vegas to LA route, has also already implemented and is currently operating a high-speed rail line in the state of Florida to go from Miami to Orlando. And has, you know, now it's a little bit lesser of a speed. So rather than 200 miles per hour, this is 125 miles per hour, but has really opened up an area of his state to economic development and growth that they did not see in Central Florida. So, again, I think, you know, there's always going to be talking heads and criticizers of, you know, of whomever's in charge of the country or the state. But really, transportation can positively impact people's lives. And when the people of a state or of a nation say that they want this and we're actually able to deliver the technology that's behind it, I think we're going to be in a really good place.
I'm going to invite listener feedback at connections@wxxi.org. That's the email address, connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Coming up here, we will talk a little bit more about what the process that Senator Cooney envisions will look like. I mean, I'm sure people want to know, so Buffalo's included? Like, who's included? Like, how do we get everybody? So we'll talk about that coming up here. We'll also talk about other aspects of transportation that the senator's going to be focusing on as the chair of that committee. Before I get to some of your emails and phone calls, I want to listen to a short conversation I had just a few weeks ago with Jacob Adams. Jacob was the former director of the Empire State Passenger Association. He was a Senator Cooney fan. He was an avid rail fan. And we knew he was dying, and we wanted to talk to him before he passed away. He was very intentional about making sure his voice was heard in this conversation. because he worked for a long time on this. And, you know, he passed away too young, but we lost him a few weeks ago. But we had this conversation before he passed away. And this is Jacob Adams talking about why he believes high-speed rail is important and what it might look like, you know, what all of some of the particulars that he has seen over the years are. Let's listen.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
I want to start by asking you how you really came to view this issue with such passion. Why does this particular issue, rail and transportation, matter to you?
Admittedly, I like trains, and I'm passionate about public policy.
How long have you thought about what this could look like in the future? I mean, I ask because I've been in Rochester for 21 years now, and one of my first assignments was covering a news conference with Congresswoman Louise Slaughter about possible high-speed rail here. It feels like it goes back a long time.
I came to Rochester in about 1997, so it's been about 27, 28 years. But I've been thinking about, I've been advocating for improved intercity passenger rail since I was in junior high, so that's probably over 30 years now.
Do you get the sense that this kind of change is actually within reach?
Well, I want to redirect that question because I think what we need in New York State is consistent, frequent passenger rail, primarily, or at least more capacity, because the trains are full, particularly between New York City and Albany and all the trains that serve Rochester and Western New York are the few trains that continue past Albany. Second, raising the lowest speeds is far more time savings than sexy high-speed rail. Yes, I'd love to see high-speed rail, but it's taken 15 years or so to actually get the environmental impact statement out. It will be very expensive to do a true, most people now consider true high speed, which is like 180 miles per hour. Now there's not like there's a single definition, but certainly over 125 miles an hour. You know, when I started out, 125 was fast and sexy, and that's what the bullet trains in Japan originally did. But now the bar has been increased to 180. But going back to my last point, is if you increase the speed of a train from 30 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour, you go from 2 minutes a mile to 1 minute a mile. Currently, trains, the fastest speeds that Amtrak runs on the vast majority of its network is 79 miles per hour. So that would get you down to about 45 seconds. So that would be a minute and 15. However, going from 60 to 120 will only save you 30 seconds. So you save a lot more time by increasing the lowest speeds.
So what's the best way to accomplish that?
Well, I think one of the best ways to accomplish that is to rebuild the third track that's engineered particularly for passenger rail. And that will allow the trains to have an extra set of tracks to get so that the freight trains don't get the So a passenger train doesn't get stuck behind a freight train. One of the problems that's increased, say, over the last 50 years is the freight trains are longer. Some would argue that they're more prone to breaking up because they're longer. But certainly the current railroad, CSX, they make money by moving freight. They don't make money by moving passengers. In fact, they would argue, as with most of the freight railroads, that they lose money because they're running trains at very different speeds if they have a passenger train. And although they're obligated by law to prioritize passenger rail, they often don't. And there's really no way to enforce that law because it takes a lot of red tape, a lot of hearings to possibly enforce that law. It's only a few years ago that they actually came up with a way for Amtrak to reasonably get its trains prioritized when they're not. And some would say that's not even reasonable either. So really the best way is, ideally the best way would be to separate the tracks completely, but that would be very expensive because that would require land acquisition.
Anything else you want to add for listeners to think about as these discussions, these debates about the future of rail move forward?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Senator Cooney, who I'm a big supporter of, for thinking about this. And at least he wants train service. A lot of politicians couldn't care less. So I'm really glad that he is, you know, studying this and has tried to make this a priority.
That was a conversation we had just a few weeks back with Jacob Adams before Jacob passed away. Jacob was the former director of the Empire State Passenger Association, longtime avid rail fan. And by the way, just as a side note, served on other boards, just a really sweet and wonderful human being. So we were glad to talk to him, and he wanted to make sure before he passed that his voice was added to this conversation. Let me ask Senator Cooney what you make of someone he was saying about, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this. Doesn't have to be 200 miles an hour. Doesn't have to be 125, but he's concerned about especially Amtrak and some of the glut that we see there on the rails. What do you see?
Well, first, he's certainly someone who will be deeply missed. And as you heard from Jacob, he's incredibly knowledgeable about the system in New York and the history, really, that has been taken over the last 25 years about high-speed rail, but really just rail passengers advocacy in general. So appreciate him participating in today's program. Jacob said something that kind of caught my ear, which is consistent, frequent passenger rail service should be the priority. And I think that's what I'm hearing as I start this new role in leadership as transportation chair is consistency and frequency are the most important attributes to any type of transportation system. And so I would agree that let's not let perfection be the enemy of good when it comes to rail transit in New York State. Now, anyone who's worked with me here in Rochester knows I love to dream big because I think that's how we push the envelope. I think that's how we get better results. And of course, I'm following in the footsteps of my former friend, mentor, and boss, Louise Slaughter, who, of course, dreamed big about high-speed rail 25 plus years ago. But I do think Jacob's onto something, and I'm hoping that we can talk more about this 90B, very government-named plan, that the Department of Transportation already has kind of underway. And this would increase the speed for passenger rail to about 90 miles per hour. So that's 11 miles per hour more than the average right now. And that would help increase frequency. And, you know, this third rail, and I mean that in a positive way, a dedicated rail line west of Albany. So think about Buffalo Niagara getting to Albany and then connecting down to New York City. That would be really important. CSX, which does maintain the freight rail line, does inhibit our ability to get people moving along quicker and not stopping as much. And anyone who's taken a train from Niagara to New York City, it's about 9 hours and 40 minutes. But if you were to pop in your own personal automobile, if that's something that you owned, and to drive that same distance, it's about 7 hours. So you're talking longer to take the train than to take to New York City.
It's wild.
And so there's equity. There's equity issues. There's environmental issues involved there. But again, as Jacob is absolutely right, frequency and consistency is important for passenger rail.
Well, let me grab a phone call from Paul and Brighton on that subject, because I will just echo Jacob's point and some of what Senator Cooney is saying here. The first time I took an Amtrak from Rochester to the Hudson Valley, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being able to do some work and relax and not having to drive a car. But boy, I'm glad I wasn't on a schedule. We got behind some freight and it was a long, long trip. And it was like no one knew it was coming. I mean, it was like a mystery what's on the tracks. And I found that baffling. And I think Paul in Brighton is concerned about where this goes next. Hello, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. And you guys had a really bad segue for this segment when the new news talked about the breakdown around New York City today and on the Eastern Corridor. They're based on a train breakdown at Penn Station. I personally wouldn't give a dime or be interested in giving even a nickel to anything that would have Amtrak involved in it, high-speed rail or not. And California's been mentioned quite a few times. There actually is a completed segment in California, and it runs from the glittering city of Bakersfield to the other glittering city in the Central Valley of Merced. And for I don't know how many billions of dollars, now you can get from Merced to Bakersfield, and then money probably would have been spent better on rebuilding both of those cities, because I'm familiar with the Central Valley. And I just trying to get people out of their cars in the United States, I agree wholeheartedly with what you talked about in England in Europe. But that's how they were. That's how they lived. They didn't live with cars. I was amazed that any small town that you're in the United Kingdom, you're almost like walking distance to a train station. And like you just said, too, to try and get from Niagara Falls to New York City, you would never think about taking the train. You get in your car and you drive, or, you know, that's it. So, great forward thinking. You need to have people, who want to do this, but, I think there's gotta be a better place to put money than any kind of high speed rail. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right, Paul, Paul's on the naysayer side. So let's talk about this. First of all, he's concerned if Amtrak's involved. Nothing's a done deal. How likely is a third rail? When we talk about third rail, all I'm envisioning is a new rail just for the new high-speed service. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Correct. How likely is it that a new plan here would involve a third rail?
Well, I think it needs to happen, especially, again, west of Albany, in our neck of the woods here in Rochester. That's a critical component.
Separate from Amtrak, then, it would be.
It could be. It could be with Amtrak. I mean, remember, the technology and the service lines that run, that Amtrak runs outside of New York State, up and down the Northeast Corridor, are very different, right? The Accelatrain, for example, is a form of high-speed rail that we don't have access to in our neck of the woods. In fact, the Accelatrain trains are actually manufactured in our neck of the woods. They're made in Hornell by a French company, Alstom, which employs 600 New Yorkers, right? So we're building these trains to then go up and down the Northeast Corridor at speeds well north of 125 miles per hour. But we don't have that same type of program and capability of running that high-speed rail because, again, we don't have that third track in west of New York. So that becomes a barrier. In terms of whether it's an Amtrak-operated train car, whether it's something like Brightline, which, again, it's a private company, that remains to be seen. The federal government gave that $3 billion to a private company to develop this rail line between Las Vegas and Los Angeles because they were the ones willing to do the work and raise the investment otherwise. Let's see how that works out. I'm open-minded as long as it's a system that actually works for New Yorkers that they will actually be able to see a benefit from.
We're talking to State Senator Jeremy Cooney from District Number 56, also the chair of the New York State Senate Transportation Committee. In a moment, I'm going to go back to Steve Strauss, who's back with us, the executive director of the Empire State Passenger Association. Let me grab another phone call. The listener's been waiting, and this is Richard in Rochester. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Hello. Give me a second. I'm just pulling off. Speaking of transportation.
Speaking of transportation. Yes, please.
Hi.
Communicate safely.
So I am safely parked.
Okay.
First off, it is a thrill to be on the show and be able to talk to Senator Cooney. I'm calling because I definitely agree with the senator about the nexus between transportation and poverty. And it's wonderful to hear that you're now going to be chairing the Transportation Department, the Transportation Committee, rather. I guess working in adult ed for the city of Rochester, one of the things that we have, a challenge that we face when we are trying to prep students for CTE, for careers, is that a lot of the trades require people to have a car. It's very hard to get a job as an electrician or as a construction worker. Even some of the cleaning jobs, which are out in, office parks, if you don't have a set of wheels. And so I don't know how much I don't believe at this point we really have any way at the Office of Adult and Career Educational Services. I don't know if we have any way really to offer a pathway towards car ownership. But it's certainly, I think, is something that would be worth exploring and seeing what kind of creative ideas could be put together there, because we have part of the equation, but we don't have the full equation. And so sometimes we this is a pretty frequent thing that happens, is that unable to offer transportation to go with jobs in the trades, it's very hard to make that happen for folks. So I guess it would be something that I would just, you know, thought would be appropriate to raise with the senator. And hopefully, you know, moving forward, that could be something, even something as simple as funds to just get licenses for folks. Although the car issue still would be a challenge remaining for a lot of people transitioning, you know, from poverty.
All right. Well,
I have another question too, a more personal question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that regards different types of transportation. I think high-speed rail is great. I think some of the big, you know, blockbuster transportation revolutions are in the future and very expensive. And I'm speaking of something a lot more modest, but something I think could happen right now. And that's making New York roads safe for four-wheeled velomobiles. I've reached out to the senator's office before, and I have spoken with his assistant. I've actually reached out also to the director of the Department of Motor Vehicles, Rebecca Wood. And I am looking at some great new technology, but it happens to have four wheels. And unfortunately, at this point, velomobiles that have four wheels don't have a place to call home in New York State legally.
Well, let me just jump in, Richard, because I want to make sure that we I'm going to use a pun. We stay on track. But but velomobiles may be their its own separate conversation sometime. Richard, if you want to send me a separate email about that, I'd like to learn a lot more. Frankly, when you look at what Senator Cooney has already talked about in terms of transportation. Yeah, we're focusing a lot on high-speed rail. It's a big subject. You're even looking at some sort of vertical takeoff aircraft here. There's a lot that feels very Jetsons-like to me. What's the vertical aircraft thing?
There's so much technology development in the transportation sector. I appreciate Richard bringing up that one example. There's also VTOLs, right, which stands for vertical takeoff and landing vehicles, which are high-speed, this is in the air, high-speed commuter-type vehicles. Think of it like a helicopter that's all electric, so not having any sort of carbon offput, that can speed it and that can travel at fast speeds in our airways to connect in shorter distances. So when I think about better connecting Syracuse and Rochester and Albany, you know, that could be an opportunity to better connect folks in the air, which does sound very Jetsons-like, but this is not small potatoes. I mean, Boeing and other companies are developing this technology as we speak. So we're talking about drones a lot nowadays, but imagine that being into a smaller passenger type vehicle. So, you know, we're not necessarily ready to come up with all the regulations and rules for air travel just yet, but it is something that we should be looking into because, again, time. You know, when we think about windows to purchase the land to do a third track for high-speed rail, that's going to take time, right? But the technology is moving faster than our bureaucratic licensing processes work. So in 25 years, the availability of different technological forms of transportation are going to hopefully, you know, dazzle us where we need to be more competitive as a state because other states are looking at these same types of technologies. And I just want to comment on Richard's point about job access. And,
yeah.
And I think that's a really, really strong point I want to highlight just because it's top of mind, because I was at the ribbon cutting last week for Amazon. They worked with RTS to create a dedicated bus stop at that location for 1,000 employees that are now working there. So if you are an employee who happens to be working at that location, you don't have to figure out, oh, how am I going to get to work? There's a dedicated stop that will allow you to transfer within our existing public transportation system. And we need to be having more and more examples of that so that people who live in one part of our community get access to the same job opportunities as others.
Just about every phone line is filled, Senator. People are engaged. We're going to come back to the phones in a second. I want to turn back to Steve Strauss. I think we've got the tech worked out. Steve is the executive director of the Empire State Passenger Association. Steve, so there's a lot you've been sort of absorbing here. I want to give you some space to tell us, when you think about the future of high-speed rail, does it need to be a third rail or its own new track? You know, are there, you know, speeds that you think about? Are you thinking about it in different ways? Take us through what you want to see.
Sure. It's been a very interesting conversation so far, and I certainly appreciate Senator Cooney's interest in exploring the options of a true high-speed rail system. But let's talk about the fact that we actually have a federally approved state improvement plan for the Empire Corridor. That approval was received in the spring of 2023. And it's a pretty decent plan. It would build 320 miles of new third track between Schenectady and Buffalo. It would add over a significantly long period of time, four additional trains, and that's not enough, but it calls for four additional trains between New York City and Buffalo. And it would raise the average speed, as was mentioned, between Schenectady and Buffalo to 90 miles an hour on a consistent, reliable basis. And this just hits on what Jacob Adams was talking about in the recording you played earlier. Reliable, consistent, frequent, slightly faster speed trains would go a long ways toward meeting our needs of serving upstate New York and connecting the Hudson Valley and New York City with upstate New York. And the problem is, this plan is not getting going. There's no state leadership to implement this plan. And now we have the federal money available. We're behind other states. We need to do a lot of work to catch up to start implementing this plan that's basically been approved at the first environmental level by the federal government. So that's really what my organization is focused on. We're happy to talk about opportunities to go faster, and there's some places between Schenectady and Buffalo that have opportunities to go faster. You start having problems and you have to move off the CSX right away if you go over probably 110 miles an hour. But there are opportunities to do that as we get into building or really rebuilding the Empire Corridor with a third track. You know, it used to be a four-track railroad in the days of the New York Central. It was a four-track railroad. So in most places, there's plenty of room to put that third track in. And we just need to get going. It's all laid out pretty well. You can look at it on the ESPA website. You can look at it on the New York State DOT website. But let's get it going. And I'm hopeful that with Senator Cooney's enthusiasm, he will put some pressure on the governor and New York State DOT to do that. And they may come back to him and ask him for a little bit more money, too.
Let me let the senator follow up, and then I want to follow up with a separate point with sure. you, Steve. Go ahead. Senator.
Oh, well, first, Steve is absolutely right that we have a plan in place that is worthy of investment. I share a concern that it is still too long to see that implemented. Work in our neck of the woods west of Albany, as Steve said, wouldn't begin for like 10, 15 years from now. They're working on some aspects like the Livingston Bridge down in the Capital Region. But again, there is a sense of urgency here in meeting the need today and making New York more competitive with other states across the country. You know, Steve also mentioned a good historical note that we had four tracks previously, right? And so as we're looking at kind of rebuilding our infrastructure across New York State, a lot of it is just recognizing that it's really not necessarily a resource issue, but a political will issue to get this done. I will also point out that the Empire State Passenger Rail Association participated in a hearing, legislative hearing, that former Chair Tim Kennedy, now Congressman Tim Kennedy out of Buffalo, held. I was part of that committee hearing this January in Albany, where they testified about this plan. And there was a big push against the Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation, to say, why aren't we moving faster? Why aren't we doing this? And, you know, there's some, you know, typical government bureaucracy involved, but good people, good smart people there who want to see this be successful. So I'm hoping that with some renewed energy and zeal and, of course, a little bit more dollars and cents, we can help spur this program along. I also want to point out one thing that's really important. We talked about this at the top of the show about changing administrations and, you know, where leadership may be. legislation was introduced in Congress this spring, the American High Speed Rail Act. This would put an investment of $205 billion into high speed rail across the country. So not obviously just for New York. But what that could do, if that was to be able to come up for a vote and have support, I think the Biden administration would be interested in at least engaging on that conversation. That could actually bring some serious resources to move this along in upstate New York. I know a number of members of the congressional delegation from New York have signed on to that legislation. Upstate members, New York City members, Long Island members. So I'm very hopeful that we can see that come to be.
All right, here's what we're going to do. If you're on the phone, hang there. We're going to get all your calls in. I am going to just read one email that I want to send over to Steve because it kind of dovetails with Paul's call from Brighton earlier. Paul said that he thinks the United States is just different than Europe, that we've kind of built our infrastructure around cars. Europe did it a very different way, and it's just more part of their culture. Part of me thinks that that is true. I mean, it is true, but part of me thinks that reality will make this hard to accomplish high-speed rail in this country. I also think, regardless of whether it's true, do we need to change how we get around because of climate realities? Is that part of what we have to do? And then there's this. Mike emails to say, Evan and guests, it's been a few years since I've been to Europe, but the last time I was there on a business trip, I rode the train in Germany. We were going 130 miles an hour, and it was awesome. It was so awesome, my boss actually started taking pictures of the screen showing us how fast we're going. Our host said, however, you guys are lucky. This train hardly ever works the way it's supposed to. It was a great experience, and I've enjoyed riding trains in Japan going back 50 years now, as well as England and continental Europe. We've utilized Amtrak in the United States to go to Glacier National Park, and our daughter frequently travels between Boston and Rochester on the train. I'm a train booster, but what do you have to say about what really happens in Europe? Do trains really consistently run and are reliable, or are they a pain in the neck? Mike, my experience is on only a few trips, and this is going to sound sort of NPR bougie, but whatever. 2015, I flew to Paris, and I traveled around France on train. It was unbelievable. The first train we took out of Paris was late by 2.5 minutes, and we were apologized to. And the locals were like, this is very weird. This is very late. And I'm like, it seems very on time to me. So it was so easy. And it did make me wonder, why are we not doing this everywhere? The first time you have that experience, it is hard not to wonder that. I can't speak exactly, maybe Steve can, for whether that's perfectly the norm. But every time I've ever been on a high-speed rail, not in this country, it has blown me away. That's where I am. What do you think, Steve?
So I can tell you that I have a good friend who is currently working in Germany and lives primarily in Amsterdam. So he rides twice a week on a European train. And his gripe was, it's not always that high-speed rail, super great experience that you've been led to believe on your occasional trips to Europe. So, yeah, I think there are going to be glitches everywhere. But there's no question that Japan, Korea, most of Western Europe have trains that we are very envious of, and I've been lucky enough to travel on some of them in some of my limited foreign travel. And I think there's certainly no question to answer Paul and Brighton. There's no question that there is demand for reliable, higher speed passenger rail, and the best examples of this are what's been going on in North Carolina and Virginia for the last 10 or 15 years, where both states have had a very active passenger rail expansion program. It has been supported by Democratic governors and Republican governors in those two states. And their ridership is booming. They're doing it incrementally. They're running at speeds of 90 to 125 miles an hour, I think. And they're adding frequencies and they're filling the trains because people don't want to drive on Interstate 95 to Washington, D.C., or to ride on Interstate 81 north-south, and so travel between places like Raleigh and Charlotte. It's like a 3 or 4 hour trip. That's a perfect travel distance for passenger rail. So we've been talking a lot in Western New York and looking at Buffalo is 100 miles from Toronto. Buffalo is 200 miles from Cleveland. These are perfect distances for 90-mile-an-hour, 110-mile-an-hour trains that run 4, 6, 8 times a day between those cities. And that would be well utilized by people in upstate New York. That right now, the biggest problem we have on Amtrak in New York State is we don't have enough seats. There's not enough equipment. There are not enough seats, and trains sell out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I'm totally sold on building a higher speed, reliable, frequent service in New York State. And then we can take on the public policy question of, do we want to take the next step? Do we want to incrementally move to something higher than that? The costs do go up significantly when you move beyond, say, 125 miles an hour. So
okay.
I think Brightline Florida is a great example to compare New York against.
All right, got to keep it tight, Senator, because I want to get some phone calls. And go ahead, Senator.
Sure, absolutely.
And just on a generational note about Paul's question about people not wanting to get rid of their vehicles, again, it comes back to an equity issue. We're finding our young professionals, those graduating from colleges and universities now, are choosing not to own a personal automobile. In fact, they actually are locating to cities and communities that have a robust public transit system, whether it's subways or buses or rail access. On the other side of the spectrum, we know we are an aging community here in Monroe County and Rochester and upstate New York. And we know that there are people who want to visit loved ones and family members in Boston, but don't feel comfortable driving along the thruway for that long of a distance. So rail becomes a way for them to be connected to their families. So for me, I think high-speed rail meets both ends of the spectrum as we kind of evolve as a American society with our transit options.
All right. Eric in Rochester. Hello, Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. Good to be here. Thanks for having me here. And Senator Jeremy, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you, Eric?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you. Listen, I want to pile on this with another connection. And you mentioned it briefly, and you talked about the environmental aspect. Just a couple of weeks ago on Environmental Connections, Jasmine Singer had a guest who said people need to stop flying. Basically, no more air travel.
For climate reasons.
That was kind
reasons.
Of ridiculous. Yeah, right. And you actually called in with a quote that said why we would not want to make the world inaccessible. However, when you talk about it, and it's already been mentioned, that anywhere from 5 to 10 hour drive time, at my age, I don't want to do a 10-hour drive by myself anymore. And I would welcome being able to hop on a rail and being able to do that. Now, when it's two of us together, obviously, yes, we drive. But my wife and I are going to New York City in just a few weeks to meet our kids, our grandkids, and we're going by rail. And if we could take away some of that local air travel, that's what I'm going to call it, down in New York City, anything within the – you're right? We're talking about
absolutely.
A five-hour drive. I think we would do it. I think that is a really good reason to add on to all the other reasons that you've mentioned for why high-speed rail would be both good environmentally and it would be good socially as well.
Eric, no surprise, who is going to be hosting this program when I'm gone in July. Thank you, Eric Logan. That's great to hear from you. He's also got the best voice in radio. But he's keying in on a point that I hadn't even thought of. If it is a goal to reduce air travel just for environmental reasons, then you probably would, if you had regional rail, cut down on these quick trips from Rochester to NYC or things like that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or find ways to better move people around the state and not have to worry about, you know, the number of flights that leave from Rochester to JFK or LaGuardia. And quite frequently, I think that we may see a lot of our friends who currently live in New York City relocate from a housing side to communities in upstate New York because they can better get back and forth across New York State. I mean, this, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but transportation and public transportation can become the great equalizer for New York.
All right, got to keep it tight here. And this is Jim in Penfield. Go ahead, Jim.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's good to speak with you. This is a lot like a large tree with a lot of branches, and it's difficult to try and keep all this organized. But you've already discussed some things that I think are very important, but among them, the four-track main line of the New York Central, it's surprising how many people don't know that that used to be the case. That's the perfect place to put in the third rail, and it would involve some realignment because over the years, since there are only two lines now, the railroads have realigned them and moved them. But that's a fix. That's an easy fix. But some of this high-speed travel speed, smacks to me of privilege and impatience. And I like your friend, Mr. Jacobs, I think it is, who said consistent and frequent. And think of how does one go about eating an elephant? You go about it by taking one small bite at a time.
Yeah, let me just jump in, Jim, because we're going to lose the hour. Steve, do you want to just weigh in briefly on that here? That he thinks there's privilege in high speeds. What do you think?
I can see that argument. I mean, but it's a lot more. It's a commitment of a lot more public resources that maybe could be spent on, you know, building a better local transit system in Rochester and Buffalo and Syracuse, while some money goes to passenger rail. Building a consistent, reliable, frequent 90-mile-an-hour, 110-mile-an-hour service across New York would get a lot of passengers, and people would like it. It would shave an hour off the trip between Buffalo and Albany, shave an hour and 30 minutes off the trip from New York City to Niagara Falls. So, you know, that's person. Is it arrogant to want to go faster? I don't know. It's certainly desirable.
Well, I mean, Senator Cooney has talked about it as an equity issue. Real quick, a question that's come up a lot is, what's a ticket from Buffalo to New York City going to cost on this thing? I have no idea. Is there any way to know, Senator Cooney?
It's hard to tell at this point because, again, it's about who's developing it and what the cost may be. But here's what we do know. We know it's safer than driving, cleaner than flying, and rarely delayed by weather.
We also know that our phone lines flooded. So I'm going to have to ask both Steve and Senator Cooney to come back again very soon.
You got it.
Because the interest is so high in this. I mean, I barely had mentioned a phone number. Let me thank Senator Jeremy Cooney, the chair of the Transportation Committee in the State Senate. Please do come back soon, sir.
Absolutely.
And Steve Strauss, Executive Director of the Empire State Passenger Association. I hope you'll come back soon, sir.
Happy to do that. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
More connections coming up.